Italian Wine Podcast. Cin cin with Italian wine people.
This podcast is brought to you by Native Grape Odyssey. Native Grape Odyssey is an educational project financed by the European Union to promote European wine in Canada, Japan, and Russia. Enjoy. It's from Europe.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast with me, Monty Warden. My guest today is Tommaso Chiali. Tommaso's family estate is called Cleto Chiali, and you produce Lambrusco.
Yes, we do. So I'm father of the family, as Monty said. Our family is the oldest Lambrusco producer in Emilia-Romagna, and especially the oldest winery in Emilia-Romagna.
So when was it founded?
The company was founded in 1860 by the founder Cleto Chiarli. That was his name. I'm now into the fifth generation in the family business. The history of our company is very linked to the history of the region. We were one of the first businesses in the region.
So what did Cleto have? Your great-great-great-great-grandfather. What did he do?
So Cleto sort of followed the typical Italian entrepreneurial history. He owned and ran a restaurant under the name of Osteria dell'Artigliere in the center of Modena.
What is an artigliere?
Artigliere means pretty much handling weapons.
So it's the artilleryman's osteria.
Exactly.
So he was an artilleryman?
Not really.
Oh, okay.
That was the name of the osteria. I believe he acquired the osteria from someone else.
Okay.
At the time.
So he's already we can see some clever marketing.
Exactly.
One of your family traits. Okay.
Very aggressive marketing. At the time he used to produce his own wine for the osteria for his guests, and we all believed that his wine was much better than his food. So he decided to close the osteria and open a 100% sort of winery activity.
So you are which generation?
I am the fifth generation.
So is your and your parents, are they still around?
My parents are still around. My dad and uncle own the business. My dad looks after the commercial side of it, while my uncle is handling our vineyards and our agricultural estates.
So your first name of your dad?
Anselmo. Anselmo's my father.
His brother and your uncle is?
Mauro Chiarli.
Okay. So let's talk Lambrusco. So Lambrusco can be various colors, pink, white, or red. Which do you go for?
So this is a good point. Lambrusco is perceived by many as a single type of wine, but Lambrusco is not a wine only. It is a family of many different varietals. These varietals grow in a very narrow area that goes from Modena on the southern side up to Mantova on the northern side of Emilia. There are about, 10 different Lambrusco grape varietals. We work as a Chiarli family with three varietals in the area of Modena: the Salamino, which grows on the northern side of the region, the Sorbara, again in the northern side of the region, very close to the Salamino, and the Grassbarossa on the southern side of Modena.
So these names, the names of these varieties of Lambrusco, no coincidence. Why Salamino?
So Salamino has got its name from the shape of the grape bunch, which looks like a salami, which is also a very typical item in the area. So salamis and prosciuttos is the culture of cured meats in our area is very big. So I believe our ancestor called this grape varietal salami because of its shape.
So that's the salami shaped grape,
exactly.
Variety of Lambrusco. What about Grassbarossa? What does that mean?
Grassbarossa is a very particular varietal. It's a dark berry like a Salamino, but differently to Salamino, it's the leaves of the vineyards become extremely red during after harvest time, and that's why Graspa, which is the stems and the leaves, and Rossa is the color red. That's why the name of this grape varietal. While the Sorbara, the third varietal in the northern side of Modena, gets its name from a small village in the area, which is called Sorbara.
What is the particular of the Sorbara? Is
Sorbara,
it a very deeply colored red one like, say, Salamino?
No, Sorbara is perhaps the most different Lambrusco grape varietal in the area. The Sorbara has a very thin skin compared to other Lambrusco grape varietals, so the color of this wine is very bright but light red. It lacks sugars naturally. What I mean by that, normally Lambrusco grape varietals have a natural high sugar content and high acidity. This grape varietal is the only only one that does not have a high sugar content naturally. Therefore, you cannot find this Lambrusco in a semi-sweet or sweet form, only in a dry style.
So it's like a dry, well, it's a dry rosé, it's like a dry fizzy rosé, isn't
it? Yes, sometimes people sort of look at this wine as a rosé, but I want to stress out that this is a red wine, very particular red, but it's fully macerated, and therefore it is a red Lambrusco.
And for me, it's one of the most underrated wines in Italy.
It is. It is also the Lambrusco that is helping the Lambrusco area and most producers gain a good reputation in the world of wine, perhaps because consumers are drinking drier than before, and this is the Lambrusco grape varietal that, as I said, fits this criteria. It has, again, a great acidity. It matches perfectly with very salty, savory food, very different cuisines worldwide, such as the spices from the eastern part of the world. So in my opinion, it is the Lambrusco of the future. But again, I urge every consumer and every person working in the trade to try all the different Lambrusco grape varietals. And what I think is very important for Lambrusco is the fact that each one of us can find its own favorite varietal. And this is very important from a producer perspective.
So you're saying that because, you know, Lambrusco, we kind of think, oh, it's just one type of wine that you can put in one little box. But what you're saying is, apart from the fact we have Solbara, which is a very light,
modern type of Lambrusco.
But you have the red Lambrusco as well. But they're all incredibly different.
Exactly.
Depending on which varietal that they're made from.
So throughout a full meal with different sort of food pairing contexts, you can find the right Lambrusco.
Okay, so if I come to your estate. I've actually had dinner at your estate with your dad, and he's one of the funniest people I've ever sat next. He really is hilarious. Okay, I can see you got the same.
It's not with me, but
no, you got the same kind of smile. I think you. I can see that you're cut from the same cloth. So if we have, I come to your dinner. I'm having dinner with you, and you want to show me your whole range of wines, and you're going to choose the food pairings.
Yeah.
So let's just go through. What are you going to give me for dinner, and why?
So if we would like to stick to the area, which I think is the most important way to go, it's to start with a platter of cured meat, moving from prosciutto di Parma to mortadella from Bologna and salami. With this kind of salty, cold cut, the Solbara is, for me personally, the ideal wine to pair. The acidity helps washing away the savory of the cured meats, the salt that these cured meats have. We can move then to a sort of a filled egg pasta, such as ravioli and tortellini. Here you can move to a dry style Grappa Rossa, which has a higher content of tannins and therefore can really sustain the heavier and tastier characteristics of filled pasta of the area. For a second course, we do not have just a main in Italy, as you know. We have a starter, a first course, a second course. For the second course, we would move to a softer, dark style Lambrusco, maybe a Salamino or a blend between Salamino and Grappa Rossa. What I mean by softer is with the higher residual sugar, around 18-20 grams. And this would be ideal with the boiled meats of the area, coming both from pork and beef. And for a dessert, we have the sweet Lambrusco, which is not seen worldwide as a great wine, but when done in the right way with only natural sugar, it is a great wine, either to pair with, for example, hard savory cheese such as Parmesan and sort of pecorino from another region, or also with dessert, sort of a cherry tart, this kind of very savory and sweet dessert.
Super. So you have various estates as well. Do you make in terms of your land holdings, when we talk about Lambrusco, we kind of think it's an industrial wine. It's just miles and miles and miles of grapes, of vineyards with heavily laden with grapes. It all gets chucked into big tanks and munched up and spat out as Lambrusco. But you have different estates with different terroirs, and your family feels that very strongly that the terroir is very much linked to the type of Lambrusco variety that you're planting and growing in that area. Is that correct?
Yes.
So let's just go through some of your single vineyards, if you like.
Okay. In 2001, we built a brand new winery under the name of our founder, Cleto Chiarli. So our family business started, as I said, in 1860. We had an historic cellar up to 2002. Then we constructed a new winery for the production of high-quality Lambrusco. In this winery, we believe that in order to have this quality in our Lambruscos, we have to pick and grow the right varietals in the right areas. Therefore, we've been owning over 100 hectares of vineyards in the best DOC areas of Lambrusco, and we have three main estates for the three grape varietals. The Sozzigalli in the north of Modena, we have around 30 hectares. This is a land between two rivers, very rich in sand and silt.
And the names of the rivers are, one of them is the Secchia, right?
Secchia and Panaro. These are the two rivers.
So this is sandy, well-drained, flat.
Well-drained, yes. Barely the need to water the vineyards in summertime, despite the heat and the lack of rain in the area. While on the southern part of Modena, close to the Cleto Chiarli winery, we have the Tenuta Cialdini, which is a single vineyard of Graspa Rossa. Here we have much more of a rocky soil, quite a bit of clay, and this is where we grow the Graspa Rossa, the single vineyard Graspa Rossa, which we produce then for a hunt.
Okay, so when you talk about clay, and we're thinking normally clay soils, you can have quite aggressive or hard tannins. Is that the case with your Lambrusco there or not?
It is the case. So the Graspa Rossa is the most tanninic type of Lambrusco varietal, and therefore it grows in this area, in the southern part of Modena, where, as I said, there is a lot of gravels and clay.
Do you pick that up in the wine, though? I mean, again, this preconception, you know, Lambrusco is, oh, it's always so soft and blancmange-like, like, you know, candy floss.
So what we like to say is that all Lambrusco varietals have that surname Lambrusco for a reason. So they have common characteristics, mm-hmm. So light-bodied, a high acidity, a good natural sugar content, and this is present also in the Graspa Rossa. The Graspa Rossa, in addition to this, has the tannins. So in my opinion, this is a very extremely well-balanced wine. It starts off extremely fruity, and then you got the dryness from the tannins at the end. So it is a very, very food-friendly wine, easy to pair with spicy food, easy to pair with very salty types of food, and the balance between the tannins and the residual sugar is great in this grape varietal.
You have another one called Tenuta Belvedere.
Tenuta Belvedere. It is the area where we grow some Graspa Rossa vineyards. This is an area very close to the Cialdini, to the Graspa Rossa estate. And we grow also the only native white berry in the area, which is the Pignoletto. I haven't talked about the Pignoletto because the Pignoletto, it is not part of the Lambrusco family, but it is a very local white grape.
And it's one to look out for fashionistas because it's...
It is.
Starting to get a little bit of movement behind it, Pignoletto. It's a very nice little name as well.
There are some markets such as the UK which are embracing this wine quite well. It is one of the most growing wines in the Italian retail market, which is a good sign for the area.
So what are typical flavors of Pignoletto, white wine?
Pignoletto is extremely floral. It has, in order to appreciate a good Pignoletto, it has quite a high residual sugar, so we're going towards an extra dry type of Pignoletto. But again, it has again this acidity, which is common in the area given by the soil, which is very important for this wine, very balanced. And in my opinion, it is what makes it unique is the floral notes that you find in this wine. So it's extremely rich. The taste sticks on the palate for long.
So what sort of food would we be looking for there as a good match?
So Pignoletto, traditionally, it is consumed, again, I don't want to be boring, with the charcuterie, so the cured meat. We do not have a culture of seafood in the area, although it would be very interesting to have it with the fried fritto misto, so fried squid, fried prawns, this kind of rich and salty seafood type. So I think this is a good pairing, and of course there is a percentage of consumers in the locally that does not like Lambrusco, and that's what they drink.
So yeah, you should launch a competition, the Cleto Chiarli Pignoletto food matching competition. You know, the sommeliers who comes up with the best food matches, something like that. Yeah,
I'm afraid they like the food more than the wine, though.
Well, you like food more than wine. Okay, that
they like.
Oh yeah, okay. So I'll cut all that out. Okay. So that was Tenuta Belvedere, Bellevue. That's your vineyards done then, I guess. Yeah. So how do you see the future of Lambrusco? The perception probably in the mind more of people in the wine trade than consumers. How can you get people to drink more Lambrusco, or appreciate Lambrusco, I should say?
So I believe in the past 20 years there has been a movement for the requalification of this wine. In particular, as Chiali producers, we believe to have been one of the examples of this renaissance of Lambrusco. In 2008, we started getting the Trabicchieri from Gambero Rosso for the first time in the history of Lambrusco.
That's this the three year, glasses award, which is glasses, a yes. much coveted thing in Italy.
Last year, we were awarded in the top 100 wines of Wine Spectator for 2018. Again, very historical for in the history of Lambrusco. And I believe these sort of achievements gained by us, but also from other colleagues, it is the way to bring back the image of Lambrusco in terms of the trade for consumers. This is up to the trade to sort of convey our work and our efforts to consumers. We see that there is a growing interest in this high quality type of Lambrusco in specific markets such as the US, Japan, the northern part of Europe, but we see that there is still out there a less good Lambrusco that is being offered to consumers nowadays. But we also believe that this is a world that is going to end in the future, no matter how much some other producers. But we believe there's going to be a bright future for this Lambrusco, but for the other Lambrusco, there's not going to be any future.
Okay, the really okay. You mean a slightly more sophisticated style of Lambrusco? I think it's a great. I mean, I've always been a big fan of Lambrusco, and people really don't believe me when I say that. And if you live in Italy and spend a lot of time in Italy, which I do, and you get given a lot of rich food often, and often you are eating when it's either been hot or is about to be hot or very very warm, and you want something that's refreshing and digestible, cuts through that fattiness of the food and doesn't make you fall over or fall asleep. It's an absolutely stupendous wine. Obviously, it has various variations, but as a category, it's a wine I've always really liked. Honestly, people don't believe me. So how could you know, wine expert, Mr. Sophisticated, blah, blah, go for Lambrusco? And I say, because it's a great wine.
It is, and you know, we're going to convince these people about the greatness of Lambrusco.
Yeah, I think trying to convince people of anything, it can be really, really hard. I think you just, it's easy for me to say be patient because you have a company to run and you've got to make ends meet at the end of the month, but I think sometimes maybe when things are forced down people's throat, they don't really appreciate them. It's just, I guess, getting more people to the region and trying these wines with the local food so that they can say, actually, you know what, this is a pairing that works really, really well. The alcohol levels are very moderate. Yeah. You know, we look at some red wines now, 15, 16 alcohol.
Yeah, Lambrusco fits those worldwide trends at the moment. People are drinking more sparkling. Yeah. They're drinking less wine with the less alcoholic content. They're drinking drier, and we have a very good dry Lambrusco portfolio in the area, so I believe we fit the criteria of at the moment and of the future. So
it's funny, you're dressed like, I mean, if you walked in now, well, you have just walked in anyway, and so, and Monty says, right, guess your occupation. I say you're an insurance salesman or something, you know, you got the tie and all the rest of it. I think maybe also, you know, I know he sells Lambrusco. I'd be like, no, he doesn't sell, don't worry, he's straight for that, you know. He's, but I suppose that's why, I don't know why I've said that, but I'm not saying that you should dress up in,
we've got to be coherent.
Yeah, yeah,
we sell it. Good, yeah. High quality Lambrusco.
Yeah. Anyway, I want to say thanks to my guest today, Tommaso Chiali.
Thanks a lot, Monty.
From Cleto Chiali. It's been lovely to hear you describe your wines and actually the terroir that they come from, because people don't often associate Lambrusco with any kind of terroir. They think it all just comes out of one big tank, which is not the case. And I wish you and your family every success. Say hi to your dad for me.
Thanks a lot, I will.
He almost gave me indigestion because he made me laugh so much during a dinner. He's got some great stories to tell. He's a very funny guy. And you've got a cheeky smile as well, so I can see where you get it from. So obviously there's a genetic thing going on, but very nice to meet you, Tommaso. I wish you were here. You're enthusiastic.
My pleasure.
A very enthusiastic chap, and wish you every success. You deserve it.
Thanks a lot.
This podcast has been brought to you by Native Grape Odyssey, discovering the true essence of high-quality wine from Europe. Find out more on nativegrapeodyssey.eu. Enjoy. It's from Europe.
Follow Italian Wine Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.